Welcome to the deep dive. We take source materials provided to us and, well, we try to pull out the key insights for you.
Exactly. Make sense of it all.
And today we're looking at a really quite remarkable document. It's from a listener, Mr. Mohammed Shafiq.
And it outlines some incredibly serious allegations. It focuses on research and development in Ontario, specifically a claimed financial scandal at the University of Waterloo.
A multi-million dollar one, according to him. So our goal here is to explore these claims, follow the sequence of events he lays out,
and really just understand the extraordinary situation he's describing in his own words. It's quite a narrative.
It really is. So where does it begin? His PhD studies, right? University of Waterloo, computer science.
That's right. And he says, back in April 2014, he uncovered this research funding scandal. We're talking nearly $5 million Canadian dollars.
Okay. And his reaction, he didn't just report it.
Well, he says he refused to keep working with his supervisors. He claimed they weren't actually regular university employees.
Interesting. And what happened after he refused? Did they investigate?
According to him, no proper investigation happened. He did get a new supervisor assigned, but he felt the core issue wasn't addressed.
Right. And this is where the account takes a very dark turn. He alleges the university and the Ontario government started using something called bi-agent chemicals, BAC.
Yes, BAC. And the alleged purpose, to cause his intellectual deterioration. It's a central and frankly shocking claim.
He describes it as slow poisoning. Does he give details on the alleged effects?
Oh, yes. Very specific details. Lowered heart pulse. Less oxygen to the brain, he claims. Even premature graying hair, shortness of breath, chest pain. It's quite a list.
If that's true, I mean, the implications are huge.
Absolutely. And he connects this directly to his health. By early 2016, he says he was diagnosed with severe depression and anxiety.
And he even alleges that hospitals were somehow involved in stopping a proper diagnosis or treatment.
That's part of his narrative, yes. Linking the health system to this alleged cover-up. Then, in August 2016, the university terminated his enrollment.
But the story doesn't stop there, does it? He talks about ongoing chest pains.
Mm-hmm. And a belief that false medical records were being created. Records showing things like hypertension, high triglycerides, metabolic disorders, things he insists he didn't have. An unhealthy lifestyle narrative.
He actually claims he developed cardiomyopathy, a heart condition, directly because of this alleged BAC exposure.
Yes, he makes that direct link.
Yeah.
So, following all this in Canada, the timeline shifts. October 2016, he travels to Pakistan.
Why Pakistan?
Seeking medical treatment and legal help, according to the document. But this is where the allegations really expand, geographically and in terms of who's involved.
Right, because he claims the Ontario government and the university then hired an undercover intelligence agency in Pakistan.
That's the allegation. And he even names who he believes operated it. Former Chief of Army Staff, General Pervez Musharraf. The goal, he says, was to block his medical and legal efforts there.
Involving a figure like Musharraf? I mean, that's an extraordinary claim in itself.
It really is. He describes intense surveillance, invisible cameras, he says, even in his bedroom, and continued use of these BAC agents.
The resources needed for that kind of operation, it paints a picture of something highly sophisticated.
Mm-hmm. And he alleges his own family, siblings, and in-laws were used to create false evidence against him about unhealthy habits.
Wow. And he couldn't get help? Doctors? Lawyers?
He claims cardiologists gave false diagnoses, lawyers wouldn't take his case. It sounds like a very isolating experience as he describes it.
But there was a moment of improvement. He saw a psychologist secretly.
Yes, he mentions that. And he felt better, attributing it to what he called the uncomputerized health system there. Interesting phrase.
Then he comes back to Canada, November 2017, settles in Brampton. Did the alleged surveillance stop?
No, he claims it continued. Invisible cameras again, hacked devices, even a tracker on his car.
And the alleged goal at this point?
He states the Ontario government intended to make him mentally and physically disabled. Which brings us to early 2018 and a new phase of allegations.
Okay, what happens now?
This part focuses heavily on his medical records. He claims his genuine records were swapped out for fakes.
Fakes showing what?
Various health problems he denies having, and also suggesting he wasn't taking prescribed medications. If true, that's a serious breach.
Absolutely. He says these fake records were given to a family doctor.
Yes, before cardiac assessments he had in August 2018. He alleges lots of tests were done, but results weren't shared, all part of hiding past and future damage, as he puts it.
And medications were prescribed, but not to help.
He alleges they were given to mask symptoms through side effects, even as his heart health was supposedly getting worse.
So what did he do?
He says he actually returned his health card in September 2020, as a protest, basically, to avoid more false diagnoses, he claims.
What about legally? Could he sue the university in Canada?
He claims he couldn't find a lawyer willing to take the case. So he ended up filing a lawsuit himself in May 2018, self-represented.
That's incredibly difficult, navigating the legal system alone.
Extremely. And he alleges court staff actually obstructed him, made it hard to file motions. Eventually, his claim was struck out.
On what grounds?
He alleges it was due to fraudulent misrepresentations and a false affidavit filed by the university. His appeals were also dismissed, he states.
Wow. Okay, then the narrative shifts again, this time involving his wife.
Yes, this is another deeply personal and serious part of his account. He claims she took an English course and during that time was manipulated by the Ontario government.
Manipulated how?
He alleges it led to an extramarital affair, which was recorded. And that recording, he believes, was used to force her to cooperate.
Cooperate in what way?
To help with surveillance against him and even administer these alleged BAC agents.
These are very grave accusations against his wife.
It's extremely grave. And he links further health issues to this period. Metabolic disorders, rapid belly fat gain, IBS, food sensitivities.
He even claims restaurants were in on it, adding extra fat to his food.
That's part of the allegation, yes. Staged evidence, he calls it. He believes a buildup of toxins led to chronic IBS and other health problems, physical and mental.
What about the mental health effects he alleges from BAC?
He gets very specific there, too, targeting the brain, frontal, temporal lobes, limbic system, leading to symptoms like mania, ADHD, auditory issues, sleep deprivation, he claims.
He also mentioned lymphatic congestion.
Yes, linked to toxin buildup, causing more cognitive and physical issues, according to his account.
And the claim about his teeth, that BAC was used to break them.
Yes, to create gaps, making it look like poor hygiene. Another piece of alleged manufactured evidence. It's quite disturbing.
So around this time, September 2020, he starts public protests in Ontario.
Mm-hmm. And he says he tried to make his wife aware of the alleged manipulation, but eventually he filed for divorce in October 2021.
Seeking shared custody initially.
Yes, but he alleges she quickly got a government lawyer and argued for sole custody, claiming he was mentally disabled.
And the court proceedings were delayed.
He alleges delays, particularly with the case conference. So faced with all this, he says he used an Islamic divorce process, left his home in October 2022, and became homeless in Waterloo.
While still protesting.
Yes, and he claims the BAC attacks continued, even contaminating his belongings while he was homeless.
This leads into the family court situation from late 2022.
Right. He mentions his belongings being stolen while homeless. Then he stayed somewhere, a residence, where he believes the other tenants were actually placed there by the government.
For surveillance.
Surveillance, and he alleges, to create scenarios to make him look mentally unstable. He even claims BAC was used to mimic the effects of drugs or alcohol in his system.
And the outcome of the family court case conference in January 2023.
He states he was declared mentally disabled. Sole custody went to his ex-wife. His financial claims, he says, were just ignored.
He also claims there were different versions of the court documents.
Yes. He alleges his ex-wife's lawyer filed materials accusing him of domestic violence and mental disability, supported by sworn statements from people like the landlord's family, even his in-laws back in Pakistan.
That's quite a list of witnesses.
It is. And he makes a serious claim about the court process itself, that the family court discards materials, and doesn't keep transcripts, making appeals very difficult.
And when he asked for the documents?
He believes he got a fake version. And while he was later in Pakistan, a summary judgment finalized the earlier interim order, confirming the custody arrangement in his absence.
So that brings us back to his efforts in Pakistan starting March 2022.
Right. He wrote to the prime minister there about this alleged agency, asked for info, but says he was ignored. Filed an online complaint with the Supreme Court of Pakistan.
And then traveled there in January 2023.
Yes, to file a formal petition. He wanted access to what he calls the report, an investigation report he believes exists about his case.
And this is where the allegations escalate even further, involving governments and intelligence agencies directly.
Massively. He claims the Canadian and Ontario governments approached the Pakistan Army, specifically naming General Bajwa for help covering up the scandal.
Offering money.
Nearly $100 million, he alleges, as compensation, and that the task was given to Pakistan's intelligence agency, the ISI.
Again, these are extraordinary claims involving huge sums and powerful state actors.
Absolutely. He then alleges the ISI installed BAC devices and cameras in his family home in Pakistan, constant surveillance, ongoing BAC attacks, he claims.
And actively blocked his efforts there.
Obstructed legal and medical help, created false witnesses, used BAC to change his appearance, add fat to his upper body. He specifies all to make him seem untrustworthy.
But he still filed a petition with the Supreme Court there.
Yes, July 2023 under human rights law, seeking that report and an investigation into the ISI's alleged actions.
What happened with that?
Rejected, he says. He appealed, but claims there was more interference. Allegations that ISI got court staff to falsely accuse him of perjury.
And the alleged BAC attacks continued in Pakistan.
Yes, he details physical effects, broken teeth again, hair loss, premature aging signs like wrinkles. He even held a public protest in Islamabad to try to speed up his appeal hearing.
How did the appeal hearing go, according to him?
He describes multiple problems. Short notice, no access to the other side's response, BAC attacks during the hearing, and a very quick conclusion. He even claims a reply was filed without him knowing.
What about the judgment on the appeal?
He says it was very difficult to get, and when he did, he claims it was a fait judgment saying the appeal was dismissed. He believes it was actually accepted, but hidden by ISI.
This is incredibly complex. He also alleges involvement from the Canadian embassy.
Yes, that the embassy in Islamabad formed a legal team that worked with ISI, their alleged goal.
Yeah.
Gather info and prepare false witnesses against him.
Focusing on what aspects?
His character, mental state, hygiene, lifestyle, a real negative portrayal. He claims ISI contacted former colleagues, employers, supervisors, relatives, even dentists.
Trying to dig up anything negative.
That's the allegation. Also investigating possible links to extremist groups, trying to get people to say negative things about Canada. It sounds like an exhaustive effort, as he describes it.
Did he try to report this alleged interference?
He says he wrote to the Chief Justice of Pakistan about the alleged abuse of process by ISI. He estimates over 32,500 BAC attacks while he was in Pakistan.
The 32,000, that's a staggering number.
It is. He then returned to Canada on March 29th, 2025.
And what's his situation now back in Waterloo?
He claims that targeted BAC attacks are continuing, but now he believes they're carried out by ordinary people, students, families, elders in the community, and he's resumed his public protests there.
And there's an upcoming court date?
Yes, a motion hearing in the Brampton Family Court scheduled for May 22, 2025. He's asking them to reverse the mental disability declaration and grant shared custody.
He expects witnesses from both Canada and Pakistan.
That's what he anticipates, yes. And he fears more targeted BAC attacks before the hearing, specifically aiming at his hearing and brain function.
Is he finding support, accommodation, work?
He reports difficulties finding both housing and employment in Ontario right now. He believes his opponents will use the hearing to try and prove these alleged health issues.
And his fear if the motion fails.
That further, potentially more severe, BAC attacks will make it impossible for him to participate in any future legal actions. He feels his ability to fight back is at stake.
So what does he feel he needs most right now?
Access. Access to that alleged investigation report from Pakistan, his original Canadian health records, and the details of those research funds that started this whole thing, according to him.
He feels he's run out of options in Pakistan.
Yes, exhausted is the word he uses. And he notes that being a Pakistani citizen means he can't file with the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights to try and get that report.
So wrapping this up, Mr. Shafiq's account is, I mean, it's extraordinary, deeply concerning.
Absolutely. You have this core claim of a research funding scandal, which he believes led to this incredibly elaborate, far-reaching alleged cover-up.
A cover-up involving, according to him, biochemical agents, intelligence agencies in two countries.
And this protracted, incredibly complex battle within the legal systems of both Canada and Pakistan.
The allegations themselves, corruption, abuse of power, human rights violations, manipulating courts, they are profoundly serious.
They really are. And it goes without saying, claims of this nature and scale would require significant independent investigation and verifiable evidence to be substantiated. We're presenting his account as laid out in the document.
Right, which leaves us, and you, the listener, with a pretty challenging thought to consider.
When someone alleges these kinds of abuses, abuses of power by large institutions, academic, governmental, what avenues for justice are actually available, especially when the claims are this complex, this sprawling?
Yeah, what happens when an individual feels they're up against such powerful entities? It really makes you think about the potential vulnerabilities people face and the sheer difficulty of seeking truth or justice in these kinds of extraordinary circumstances.